we call that, Billy?
Well, I used to call it the A number one whoop-de-doo banjo thing and waltz.
But, I like that.
I don't know if really it's really appropriate. I'd call it what you like. That'll do, serve as a working title.
I see.
Banjo music.
I see. Billy Fair said the A number one whoop-de-doo banjo thing?
Banjo thing and waltz.
And thing and waltz. I like that. I'll tell you something else. Ain't nothing like it anywhere else on the instrument. That's beautiful. I love it. Yeah.
It's fun. It's fun playing it, too. That's a, you know, I've been playing the banjo for about 23 years, Skip, and it's only been the last 5 years that I've really thoroughly, completely, wonderfully enjoyed it. Getting behind one of those things is really a trip. It's just incredible.
Well, you do things that nobody else ever has done. You always did.
Well, but I didn't
enjoy it. But obviously
you're
doing a lot more. Well, maybe you're trying to prove something then, right?
I was trying to prove something. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, we all were, let's face it. And when you find out that the real thing is, do you enjoy what you're doing, right?
I guess that's about it.
Is your work and your hobby the same? Is your work and your pleasure the same? That is the mark of a happy man.
You don't sound like you believe it.
I do, as a matter of fact. That's why I like doing this.
Well, I don't put it in quite those terms. I just decided for myself that after all is said and done, if I've ever learned a lesson in my life, it's I should have done what I wanted to do in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Right. But you see, they were out there telling you, you know, they with a capital they and...
Yeah, we know about
neon them. Lights, they, them. They were out there saying, oh, you can't do that.
No, that's not true. And I mean, I didn't mean...
Or one doesn't do that, which is worse.
Many of they told me that very thing, but I didn't hear it.
Oh, no. Then it boils down to individuals who care, and right. Not that amorphous they them, because
okay.
They them always say no, you can't, and one doesn't do that sort of thing, you know, and that's the end of a lot of dreams happen from that thing. Yeah, keep going, Billy. I got to read Troubadour list. You want me to do it first or later?
Suit yourself. I'm ready to sing another song.
Sing another song, and we'll do it.
Baby, you opened my heart.
Wow.
Desert blue. I only heard those ancient country banjo tunes. But now I'll make a fresh start. Tell you of the very best part. Baby, you opened my heart. You opened my heart. To live for years and years. why I am here. I saw you there, I wanted to make love with you. You turned me down, oh babe, I was so mad at you. But you caused me to melt, feel the love I'd never felt before. And baby, you opened my heart. Peony, open my eyes. The Beatles opened my ears.
Combination
of what?
Peyote, the Beatles, and you. Billy Fair, we have an announcement from the station. We'll be back with the Troubadour list in just a moment. Tape lift.
Yeah, I think I could handle that.
You think you can handle that?
I'll keep my eye on it.
Okay, Philly Bear.
Times around, my head is going. Is it you I feel, or is it snowing? I feel so cold, I guess I'll be going, 'cause I can't get no warm feeling from you. Turn me on, I try to take it, you get so high, but I can't make it. You put me down, I try to fake it, but I can't get no warm feeling from you. Coming down, but you're still smoking. I'll hang around, 'cause I think you're joking. Your grass is brown, my throat is choking, and I can't get no warm feeling from you. So cold, I guess I'll be going, 'cause I can't get no warm feeling from you.
Hope that doesn't apply to present company.
No.
Not at all. Listen to what you're saying, Bill. No. Billy Fair, who has been part and parcel of what we've done since just about the beginning. I would say we've got 8-9 shows back there in which Billy Fair performed from 1957-ish through mid-60s. And it's a pleasure having him come back. As a matter of fact, you did a show when we lived in the house up on the hill, in the back room.
Up here,
yeah. With Freddie Engelberg, I think Rosmini. Mm-hmm. I don't know who else was involved, but it is a good show. And we did another one with Gene Ritchie and with Dick when I stayed at Theo Bickel's. Back in New York, and of course they're the ones. There's a one tape from the original Fiend John with Steve Knight and George Megadichian.
You do have a memory, George Megadichian. Whatever happened to George? He was
he's the best oud player I ever heard.
Fantastic oudist.
Yes, yeah. And some kind of clarinetist too, a classical clarinetist. You will find him on Carlton Records, friends.
George, huh?
George Megadichian, and I think, East of Athens and stuff like that, what have you. Yes, the Trade Winds, Jerry Safir, and Romenia, and Menachem Dorman, and Menachem Dorman. That was before he was Manny, right? When he had the little pie slice of a Fiend John on 7th Avenue South, with the Greek music on the tape machine, and we tried to build a studio upstairs, and we couldn't use it by the time. Varda Carney,
right. Sure.
Oh, yeah. Well, we did a show with Mapes down there, with Gibson, with the Arnims of Bar, and what have you, all in this little bit of a room that we could fit into this living room about four times.
You never used that place, huh?
What?
Oh, you did use it.
Yeah, we used it, but come July, it was like 120 degrees up there. It was, all the heat would rise from the kitchen, and I asked him if he'd please run a duct over from the air conditioner, and he said no, and I said, well, when either you do that or the weather cools, I'll be back to do the show in there. Meanwhile, the phone company had spent something like $3,000 putting in the lines because the because the block on which the old Fiend John was located was, you know, in the village, and the wires were old, and they couldn't get enough level out, so what they had to do was improve everybody's telephone service on the whole block by putting in new wires under 7th Avenue and throughout that whole quadrant on
Bedford. Good.
Yeah, right.
That's how progress is made.
That's right. And all they could charge me was $50 for the installation. I smiled a lot about that. But in any case, fun and games. That was 10 years ago, and of course we go back a lot farther with Billy Fair. But that is the important thing. Quite obviously, Billy has been marching forward. This is KRHM Los Angeles, friends, just in case
Billy,
you wondered.
Do you know what happened to Annie Bird?
Annie Bird.
Does you remember
Annie Bird? Used to play the auto harp, great harp, and sang.
The last I ever saw of Annie Bird, and I don't mean to imply that this is the last anyone ever saw of her, was when she got hit over the head by a New York City policeman in the Washington Square riots.
Oh,
really?
She was one of the few people that was really knocked out and carried away unconscious. Little 98-pound Annie Bird.
If she weighs 98 pounds.
Yeah. I've never seen or heard of her since. Now, perhaps somebody knows where she's at. I'd love to hear from her because she's a good friend.
She's good people. And she's, you know, she had her own very special and very precious thing as a performer, as a singer. And she belongs to a cadre of people who made music a lot of fun to listen to.
I imagine if you really wanted to find her, Harry and Jeannie West could probably tell you where she's at.
But now we have to find them.
Well, that shouldn't be too hard. I mean, they're around New York.
They are?
No, they live right up in the Bronx. You can see their house from the George Washington Bridge.
Really?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. But, hey, Shades of the Folklore Center.
Those were funny days, Skip.
They sure were. They sure were.
You know, when we thought we were on top of it and really knew where it was at, the seed hadn't even germinated yet. It was just beginning. Isn't it incredible? Isn't it unbelievable what's happened?
Yes.
I'll tell you, the real break that I felt in New York was in 1963. All of a sudden, it was Freddie Neil and Johnny Sebastian and Vince, you know, who'd been around forever, but with a new, whole new thing. And Lou Gossett was working at One Basket. It was a whole bunch of young people, and I said, they don't have any parents anymore. They divorced them. Right? These kids are creating their entire own community, musically, socially, philosophically, whatever. And it started to become very, very exciting because the only roots they cared about were first cases like Woody and Lead Belly and back to, John Hammond doing, you know, Robert Johnson and Fred McDowell things, but doing it his own way. And they were all 18, 19, 20, 21, you know, most of them. Punks, right, says my wife. But awful nice ones. And they were working for next to nothing in the basket clubs and the rest of it around town, while the folk music of the 50s was burying itself in its very last resting place. and sounding, I hate to use the word, but sounding terribly irrelevant.
Well, I don't view it quite like that. I think there are many roots that the roots passed through the folk music of the 50s. The folk music of the 50s produced the folk music... the music of the early 60s. Musically, musicologically, you can follow what was being done with chords and chord patterns and chord structures, for instance. A direct line starting out from the old Irish fiddle tunes right through the so-called folk music of the 50s, you know, the use of this sound here, which is still one of the most common changes in music today. Direct line right from the old Irish fiddle tunes, old Joe Clark. And that was a pivotal chord change around which a lot of things happened, you know. In the 50s, they were souping it up with all kinds of really mishmashy chords, I used to think of them. And I never knew, you know, people would say to me, oh, you're just sour grapes because you can't do it. And I never liked that. And But then the Beatles came along, and so on and so forth. You know, this is, to me, this is the major thing. But I don't think that they're divorced from those roots. I think they learned from it.
Folk roots in them too.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, of course, the other side of the mainstream, I suppose, of development is Dylan. And Dylan took a big jump from. He wasn't listening to folk singers of the 50s. He was listening to Woody and thinking some of his own thoughts, right?
Oh, yeah, sure.
And when he decided to break out of the folk mold entirely, the folk mold, not folk music, because, well, you know, what is folk music? We're not going to go into that ever again on this program. But when he decided to look for new ways of saying what he had to say musically, that famous or infamous thing out at Forest Hills where he first electrified and everybody got all uptight and upset and what have you. Not everybody. Some people said, wow, yeah, gee.
The general tenor of opinion was, who does he think he is?
Right.
Yeah.
But essentially, what we're into now, which is a... It actually goes back a lot farther than Irish fiddle music. It goes back to the troubadours and trouvères through the chansonnier tradition of France. The singer-songwriter... with something to say, with a high level of literacy, with varying degrees of musical sophistication, and the best sense of the word, really, I think, got its impetus from Dylan, more than from the Beatles.
Do I understand you to say that the middle-aged troubadours got their influence from Dylan?
No, I'm talking about the ones who are getting middle-aged now.
Uh-huh, right.
Right. No, we were talking about the medieval troubadours.
You know, if to don't, I mean, I will belabor this just a little longer, if I may.
Belabor.
What was happening then is that many people, and I myself was guilty of this, expected a lot of the young performers to pay dues being ethnic before... You know, this is really the way it was. Before they had the right, quote, unquote... Well, I'm speaking for myself and a lot of other people... To go out and do something originally creative. But what we didn't know is that there was something else happening too, and sort of an Oriental philosophy began to seep with little small tendrils of fingers through the cities of the United States, and people started looking within themselves for what they wanted to do, regardless of what they were supposed to do. And they began to find that their real satisfaction came... Well, in Dylan's case, I imagine from plugging in and going electric, putting it crudely, you know, and the music
at
took
that
on
time,
a,
right?
Took a, the music took on a tremendous vitality, which it never had before. Only by virtue of the larger sound, you know. I've become a complete. I mean, I went from one extreme to the other, but I've always been an extremist, you know.
You've been a nut, Billy. That's what.
I love it. I just love what's been happening the last few years.
Yeah,
I
mean, me too.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, actually, you know...
And no, so much so that I have a very beautiful pickup for my banjo. And I can plug in, it's really a fantastic pickup, and sit right in the middle of the loudest rock band you ever heard and play along with them, and it just feels so fun.
Yeah, well, we got a few acoustic amplifiers out there. The next time around, we'll plug them in, right? No, the means that you use are not to be judged in terms of themselves. They're only... to be judged in terms of the use you make of them, right?
Yeah, okay, sure.
No, I mean that. That's serious. If you want to play on a Jew's harp or you want to play on a theremin, as long as it means something musically in terms of what you have to say and you do it well and it isn't a gimmick for gimmick's
that's
sake.
That's the beautiful thing that's happened and that's happening today with a couple of influences I don't really hold with, but... What basically has happened the last few years is that anything goes.
Yeah.
Anything goes, and isn't it wonderful?
And the funny thing is that the best musicians are getting simpler and simpler and simpler in terms of what they consider is required to go. All of that musician's masturbation that went on with the acid rock and what have you, and they get self-hypnotized by...
Oh, man, I love acid rock. Don't
you like acid rock? No.
Huh?
Bad music, too much
of
it.
Oh, I just think it's
there was
great.
Only one guy, the only one Jimi Hendrix, and all the people that copied him and couldn't do it would go on for 24 minutes per side making those funny noises and not saying anything.
I don't think that Big Brother and the Holding Company and the Jefferson Airplane were copying Jimi Hendrix. You've always got your good performers and you've got your imitators. Sure, right. This always happens, and that's the way it should be. You know, every single musician can't be a full-blown creative genius. We all have to learn, and if a man in his lifetime finds, you know, one really good nugget of creativity which he can create and put forward and say, there, that's me, good for him. Because most people in the world don't even get to do that.
How do you feel about your A number one banjo thing?
Well,
How close is that to the level? I'm on my way.
I'm learning a new way of playing the banjo, the Billy Fair way, not the Doc Boggs way or the Uncle Dave Macon way or the Pete Seeger way. They were fine, and I love their banjo playing, and I play like, I still do a lot of that stuff. But what concerns me now is what I'm doing. I don't really care, in one sense, what category I fit in, because I'm no longer, first of all, I no longer make my living as a musician, which is the best thing that ever happened to me musically.
Right.
See? And also, you know, when I play some of these tunes, man, it feels so good. It just feels so good just to sit and do it that nothing can replace that.
Yeah.
Nothing can replace
that. That's what it's for, isn't it?
That sure is what it's for.
You know, it's... I talked to Mickey Newber and Sammy Smith, and there's a whole bunch down in Nashville, Christofferson, Chris Gant, et cetera, who they go out in Mickey's boat and they sit around and they just jam, right? And we know about the Delaney and Bonnie and Leon Russell and what have you, that kind of thing with a gospel bass, and they just have a marvelous time. But strangely enough, I found that there's very little talented people just sitting around enjoying themselves and jamming with each other these days. It's the one thing that I miss the most. Yeah. It's very hard to get this one and that one and the other one together. We wanted to get, for instance, when Laura Nero first came to the Troupe, we wanted to get her and Harry Nielsen and Randy Newman together, and Randy and Harry said, yeah! And she said, no, I don't do that.
Good for her. Good for her. There are lots of things that I won't do that I'm asked. What happened? A lot of times, I mean, I really didn't...
Well, we recognize her right to not do it, and, you know...
But it's not a matter of right. Think of what you're doing, for instance. For instance, when you asked me to play Green Corn, I was delighted to do it. I like Green Corn. But many people kind of insist... You know, they'll sit there, you know, you'll do a guest thing on somebody's program or somebody's show or be called up on the stage. I do a lot of this. And a cat who's up there, an old buddy of yours, he's doing his things that he wrote yesterday, and he calls you up and he starts requesting stuff you did 10 years ago. Man, I don't want to do that. I want to do what I'm doing now.
Yeah, well, that's
and
what
if
we
Laura
to
Nero
hear.
doesn't want, you know, doesn't feel that she can do that thing, jamming with people, you know, because when you jam with people you don't know, you've got to go back to basic things and kind of get all the practically all of your style away.
Well, it wasn't going to be a jam. Essentially, it was going to be an exchange. These are These are people who have a great deal in common.
I see. Yeah.
And
evidently, she didn't think so, though.
Well, no, she just plain doesn't do that at all. She writes and she performs, and that's it. Bang.
Good. Good for her.
Yeah. Yes, as long as it comes out of a positive thing and not out of fear. I don't know. I don't know the lady.
Who knows?
You know. There is a tremendous value in the cross-fertilization of people who are of the same generation who have, it's happened. It happened in Athens. It happened in Venice. It happened a lot of places. And it's happening now.
Yeah,
you see it on records and what have you. We get the all-star jams and what have you behind this and that and the other artist. And sometimes it's successful and sometimes, you know, it's a mass nothing. Because the sum of the parts does not make a whole, you know. But it very rarely seems to happen on the casual basis that it used to happen within the folk structure, anyhow, where it was really fun trading back and forth.
It's kind of difficult to sit around and jam the way we used to because most of these cats are playing electric instruments, you know. There's that.
Not anymore.
Well,
less and less.
Yeah, but still, I mean, that was true for a long time. You know, it was just a jam was a thing that had to be planned like at least a half a day in advance to get the stuff there. You know, to plug everything in.
Yeah.
And you know, that's the way it was. Now maybe things are getting back to a simpler acoustic way, but still retaining so much of what was picked up. Oh, I just think it's wonderful. I really like the way it is. I don't really miss that kind of jamming because let's face it, so much of that jamming was and I'm not saying it shouldn't have happened. It should. But so much of that jamming was one person, like, outdoing another person.
Oh,
people
yeah.
sitting around wondering when they're going to get their turn. Or
yes. play.
You know, it was unpleasant. It was really rare that there was ever, that I ever saw a really happy time for a few hours with people sitting around and playing.
In our particular environment.
But you see, now we have accepted that. We've accepted the fact that everybody has got their thing, and when the jam's today, you get up and you do your thing. and no one objects.
Well, essentially, that's what Woodstock was all about, and the Big Sur festivals.
Yeah.
The ones that worked, everybody was enjoying everybody else's thing, and they weren't trying to bury each other, right?
Yeah.
And Newport, during its best years, particularly around 59, 60, 61, in there, was much the same thing. There was a very warm sharing thing. And we've had it on this program for a lot of years. As a one thing we feel kind of fortunate about, perhaps we have a little bit to do with setting up the emotional attitude, but essentially we aren't interested in seeing how well somebody can cut somebody else.
Right.
You know, we're only interested in the sharing process. Speaking of musicians' nostalgia, we turn to music after this announcement.
Thank you. Family comes to call.